Good morning. So last time we went through applying pipelining to our single cycle processor. So we divided it up into the pipeline stages. We kind of previewed because our textbook used these stages even when we didn't actually care about doing pipelining yet. We talked about, well, we've done pipelining, how do we figure out how much that actually helps? We had this idea of critical paths, that we need to have some amount of stuff happen where a value is produced, usually at the rising edge of a clock cycle, and needs to be used through a series of stuff to be ready for some component that needs a value usually at the next rising edge of the clock cycle. And that lets us measure what our cycle time needs to be. We get lots of those measurements from our circuit. We look for the worst case. We have to set our cycle time to that. We have to handle sort of the worst instruction. We can't like vary the cycle time on an instruction by instruction basis practically. Like, yes, there might be ways of doing that, but that's generally not something a processor is going to do because it's too complicated to make that happen. Instead, we'll just choose a cycle time that works for every instruction we might have. We talked about hazards and dependencies. So we mentioned that, well, you know, we have instructions where one instruction needs the result of another, and sometimes this just works. Sometimes, you know, for example, when an instruction's reading a value written by another instruction, it's going to be in the register file when it reads it, no problem. But sometimes it doesn't just work. Sometimes it ends up that because we've changed the order in which events happen in our pipeline, we've made it so the instruction doesn't write its result until after another instruction would read it in the new way things execute. And we have to do something about that. That's a hazard, meaning a case where our pipeline design, if we do the most straightforward thing with it, doesn't actually produce the correct answer. So we're going to need to give it some help to make it produce the correct answer. And the biggest example of this was data hazards, where we're reading data before it's written. We'll see some other examples of that over the next few days. The most notable is with what we'll call control hazards, where we don't know what instruction to run until we have information from something that hasn't happened yet. And when we have these hazards, we have this generic solution called stall that we could just insert not, so we'll just delay running the future instruction long enough for us to have whatever we need ready. And stalling would mean the hardware would insert these knobs, and that would solve the hazard. It means that we're losing a lot of the benefit of pipelining because we're no longer running one new instruction every cycle. Now we have to wait to get new instructions sometimes. And stalling, well, it solves our problem, but there's actually a lot better solution for a lot of our hazards. And in particular for data hazards, we learned, wait a moment, when we compute this value that we're going to use in a future instruction, we don't store it right away, but we have it computed a lot earlier. And we can take advantage of that by taking that value we've already computed and sending it to the instruction earlier, so that instruction doesn't have to stall, or doesn't have to stall as much at least. And this idea was called forwarding, and we're going to talk about implementing forwarding as our sort of main topic for today. Before moving on to that, questions about things we covered last time? Okay, so based on the quiz scores, I probably should go over a bunch of the quiz questions. Some of these will probably be resolved because we're going to like give a lot of for people who like wrote 2999 instead of 3000, yeah, we'll probably give a lot of credit or all credit for that. But some of this seems to be a real not understanding things. So let's start with question one. So question one, we gave you the time for a bunch of components. We asked for basically what the critical path was, where we had this pipeline that was split up. So we had fetch, and then decode to execute to memory to write back. These were our two stages, stage one and stage two. And we wanted to find the critical path. So my candidates for the critical path were that I had to get a value from the PC through the instruction memory, through the PC increment circuit, which needed the output of the instruction memory because we need the I code, back to the PC. I had to get the value from the PC through the instruction memory to the pipeline registers to get from fetch to decode. And I had to get the value in decode, the decode to write back stage, this mega stage. And I get the value from the pipeline registers through the register read, through the ALU to memory write. Or I had to get the value from the pipeline registers through the register read, through the ALU, through memory read, through register write. One very subtle thing here that I wasn't paying close attention to when I chose the numbers for this question is that the memory write operation, when we do that, we don't need to do a register write using the result of that. So the critical path did not include both memory write and register write because we never do memory write and take the result of the memory write and use that to write a register. Right, when we're taking the result of a memory operation, it's a read. So when we're considering our critical paths, we didn't need to consider the memory write, but we never need to consider doing something after the memory write in addition. The memory write was the end of the cycle in that case. So it ends up our dominating critical path was this one where we went register read, ALU, memory read, into memory register write. Yes? So the question is, what about with push queue? Doesn't push queue both do a memory write and a register write? Yes, but the way where push queue decides what to write to the registers doesn't use any result of memory. So the path is going to go from the ALU directly to register write. So that would be the path that we could be considering for push queue, which would be shorter than the critical path for some other instructions. Does that answer your question? Other questions? Yeah, so for push queue, I guess it probably should be explicit. The paths we have to worry about are this one and the pipeline registers to register read through the ALU through register write. So those are our two push queue paths. And then neither of them are the critical path. Other questions? Okay, and question two wasn't a problem, so let's go to question three. So question three said we had a 3,000 picosecond cycle time with one stage, and we wanted to get 8 stages and ask sort of what's the range of cycle times we would imagine having. So sort of our ideal case is we take this 3,000 picoseconds of work and divide it by 8, so we get 375 picoseconds, and our register delays would be so tiny they wouldn't matter. So that's sort of our best case. So that was our best we could do was 375. And the worst we could do, well, if we're thinking like just in general the worst we could do is that whatever work we're doing, there's no good way of dividing it up into stages. In which case, what we'd end up doing by adding 8 stages is just adding pipeline register delays, but the longest stage is still 3,000 picoseconds. Now, the question tells us that we improved performance, so we know that didn't happen, so that's why I get an upper bound of 3,000. But sort of our worst case is that we can't actually usefully divide it up into stages, so we end up with a stage which is an azimuth. Okay, so questions about question three? Okay. Question four was asking what's in the pipeline registers between fetch decode and execute memory write back. I think the main thing which confused people is the register indices. So by register indices, I mean like RA and RB. And you might have said, well, oh, don't we just, haven't we already used them here in decode? And well, yes, we have, but we need to use them still some more in write back. Because in write back, we're still using the register file again to do the write. The write needs the register index to write to. That's part of the write back stage. We want to do that, pass that information from the first stage to the second stage, so we're writing to the correct registers, not to the registers for whatever instructions being fetched right now. Questions on question four? Okay, so then question five. So let's look at this diagram here. So we have this code here, our pipeline, and to figure out what's going on and look at, okay, we have these dependencies here. So this R9 value, refining the first two instructions, needs to be passed, and also we need to have the R9 value passed from the first to the last instruction. There's no other dependencies. Yes, we have a lot of instructions using array, but they're all reading it, none of them is writing it, so there's no dependency there. Like, the value of R8 they're getting comes from earlier, and there's an instruction reading R10 and writing R10, but they're not doing it in order where we hope to read the value that's written. If we're reading the value that's written, something went wrong. So then I say, okay, so if we're not doing forwarding for this case, then what needs to happen to work this dependency is that when I write R9 here, it needs to be, that's the earliest I can read it. Which means that for a second add instruction here, I needed to delay it with one cycle of stalling to allow that read to happen. For our second read of R9, there's no problem because by the time we try to do that read, or we've already written it by far, nothing to do there. And then I just count and find out, oh, this is cycle 7 for this read. Questions? And I, as you might guess, strongly recommend making diagrams like these when you have questions like that, even if maybe you technically don't need to, because I sure would miss things. I don't do that. Okay, so let's talk a bit about going back to our forwarding example. So when we're talking about forwarding, we're looking at this case here where I said, okay, we have our value we want is being ready to be written. So it's in execute stage, we've computed the value, and we're about to send it to write back to be written. But let's make sure we don't have to stall. So to avoid stalling, we're gonna shortcut that value back to replace a value we just read from a register. That's wrong because we're gonna about to replace it. And we have a box because we don't always want to do that. And we also need to have a box for our second register. Let's look at this scenario. So we have our boxes for our case of forwarding the value we just computed and execute through to replace a value we read that's wrong. So let's consider the case here. So when do I want to replace a value I read for source A, which is reading register A, here, with the value we just computed in execute? And I'm gonna need to write like a condition for this mux. So what's my condition gonna be? And you can see the answers I go into here, we're gonna be comparing register indices. So what we want to say is that the register I read matches the register that's going to be written. So what does that correspond to here? Give you a minute to think about it, and it may help to remember our register naming convention, register single naming convention. So the input to our fetch to decode registers was named lowercase f, the output was named capital D. That's sort of our general convention. So therefore, we have lowercase d for decode to execute input, and uppercase e for decode to execute output, and so on. Who'd like some more time? Okay. Anyone still want more, some more time? Couple people. Give it a little bit more. I guess I'll label, this is the lowercase u side, this is the uppercase w, not n, w side. Okay, so let's say, who thinks A? B? Okay. C? Okay. D? E? No clue? Okay, so we have a real variety of answers here. So let's start with the what else is going on in this question? We have this eval E. So why is this called eval E? So our convention is lowercase e is the input to the execute outputs registers, which in this case is execute to write back. And our full pipeline will be execute to memory. And that's our val E, you know, the value we just computed from the ALU using our book's naming convention. So that's the signal that came out of the ALU here. That's eval E, that's what we're sending as this mux input here. And that's a value for the instruction that's currently in execute. And if we want to find out where that value is going, we would find that out from some other information in execute. Because remember, we always pass all the values for one instruction from one stage to the next. So the values about where this value in execute is going better be in the execute stage. So it has to be one of these values here, and the only candidate value on this diagram, assuming the diagram is complete, is this other signal here, which in fact, if we look at what happens to it, when this value goes to the next stage, we also send this value, and in the next stage, we send that value into the register along with the other value saying where to put it. So this other value here from the execute stage, that's where that's going to be stored. That tells us where it's going. And if we think about how we should name it, well, it's becoming dest D in the write-back stage. So following our typical naming, we'd have that this is going to be big W dest D. That's going to be assigned to reg dest D, and therefore the other side of it would be little e dest D, where basically I'm just naming it based on what signal it becomes at the end, which is reg dest D. So it becomes reg dest D, so following our textbook's convention, I've named it based on that in the earlier stages. So it's the value that's going to be dest D for passing through. And this dest D is going to be where we're going to write the value from execute, because we keep the registers values together. So we can kind of think of eval E and e dest D as a pair, that we're going to, eval E is something that's going to be written to e dest D when we advance from execute to write. And therefore, that's what we should be checking, because what we want to check is, you know, if this value is the one we want, then I want to send it. When is it the one we want? When it's going to be sent to the same write register. So our condition is C here, because I'm asking the question, did I just read from a register that this value is going to be written to? All the other things are checking a different stage, so they're not checking where the value in execute is going to be written. They might be checking where a value in a different stage is going to be written. But we need to know about the value in execute, where is that going to be written, doesn't match the place I just read from. Because sort of the question we're asking is, the value I just read, is it something that should be replaced with this other value? That's only true if this other value is going to the place I just read from. So questions? Figure that out. So one thing which may have caused some confusion here is that you might say, wait a moment, but if I have a value in writeback, don't I need to send that too? And the answer is yes. So we're going to actually going to end up needing another input to this mux with a different condition for that. So yes, we need to do something about values in writeback, but that's not what this condition is for, because we're sending the value from execute. So questions on our forwarding condition? Yes?
What instruction would send it to the box?
What instruction would send?
Yeah, or like I'm trying to understand a scenario where you need the value to just compute it again.
Question, when would we need to do the forwarding path, like the one from here?
Yeah.
This here is an example of that. So in this example, the first instruction computes a new value for R9, which the second instruction needs. Where we're going to get it to the second instruction is right after it's computed. We're going to replace the value that was just read. So in the next cycle, the second instruction uses that value for its app. Does that answer your question? Other questions? Okay, so something notable about this is that it was really handy, really important to have this destination register right where. We really wanted to know that value we computed from the ALU was going to a particular register to do this check, and we need to know what register that was. And in this case, that was simple, but we know we have some instructions where figuring out the destination register is kind of less trivial, because like we have to like check, you know, is this an instruction that actually writes to a register, does it write to RN or B, and so on. And this is why you may remember earlier that we said we're going to compute the destination register in the decode stage. And this is the main thing it will help with, is that now we have the destination register indices available for all this forwarding logic. We can check, you know, is there a value for me to grab from this stage to replace a value I just read? Okay. I guess another thing to note is I went over the condition for this top mux. We're going to have a similar thing for the bottom mux, just with reg source mean. So we saw forwarding. Yeah, so here's sort of our help. So before we did forwarding, we needed to delay, you know, our decode until after the writeback here. With add, with opq in general, we don't need any delay. We just can send from the end of execute to the end of decode. This is just one possible way of forwarding. In our full processor, we're going to have a few more. So we saw we can send the, so let's draw the ones we've had so far. So we saw we could do, you know, the output from val e, we can send back here. We can also forward a value we just read from memory, for example. That would be another thing we might want to forward. We can forward a value that we computed previously in the ALU. We can forward a value that we're about to write back. And we'll go through some of these examples more systematically later on. But there's going to be a whole bunch of places we're going to want to grab a value from a future stage and send it. So something we can't do, something like this. this might seem like a clever idea, that I'm going to say, okay, I can just, you know, so previously I was doing, just saying, okay, I'm going to take the value out of memory, I'm going to send it back into, you know, to replace the value I just wrote. That's fine. But let's say I say, okay, well, let's take the value from memory and just have it, instead of having it replaced before the end of the cycle, just have it replaced, you know, at the beginning of the execute stage. So this is something we shouldn't do. And what's the problem with this? Someone tell me what's wrong with doing this type of forwarding instead of the example before. Like, why is sending it to the other side of the pipeline register going to be a problem? Like, so I would say this is something we can physically do, but it's going to have bad consequences for our processor. So what are those bad consequences? So like, I can physically add a mux here, put this value in. That's going to be possible. But there's a reason we're not going to want to do this. And it's not going to help us with our processor. So what was in forwarding, what were we trying to improve? Like, what was doing forwarding helping us do better? Yeah.
Save time.
So we wanted things to be faster. So, and this is not going to accomplish that goal. So this is going to not be. This is going to be slower. So why is this going to be slower? Yeah.
We still have to wait to change the value.
So saying we're making this stage slower. Yeah. So our critical path is longer. So we'll still have decreased the number of cycles, but we'll have increased our cycle time because this is our new critical path. That now, with this forwarding idea, a value has to go through the data memory into the ALU in one cycle. And if we're doing that, if we need to have the cycle time long enough to allow us to do that, why did we bother having memory and execute be separate stages in the first place? So we can do we have lots of options for forwarding, but what we can't do is we can't do something that makes the critical path a lot longer. So our earlier idea here, this doesn't make the critical path a lot longer. We're adding a mux. That's not going to be a big deal. So that's basically the addition to our critical path. With the other option, we're really increasing our critical path. We're going to really increase our cycle time. But when we're doing forwarding generally, we don't want to increase the critical path substantially. You know, that's going to be an important thing about when forwarding is practical. So we don't, if our forwarding just adds a mux to the critical path, not a big deal. If our forwarding is like making it so we have to do two things, we split up into separate stages in one cycle on the same critical path, that's going to be a problem. And that's not something we're going to do. Even though, yeah, it's physically possible to set up that circuit. So questions? Yeah. Why this is?
So why can't we? So could this be explained why we can't override the output of the pipeline register?
Why can't override the output of the pipeline register? So the problem here isn't that the problem here isn't actually that the line the met of the that we're replacing the output of the pipeline register instead of the input. The problem is that we're doing so in a way which makes our critical path much longer. So for example, let's say that instead of forwarding here, I decided my forwarding path would be that. That would be fine, because that doesn't make our critical path much longer, right? We don't have to go through both the data memory and the ALU in one second. So the problem here is that the design I've chosen makes us have to do too much in one cycle. But the problem isn't that we have to forward to one side of the pipeline register. The problem is that when we forward, we have to make sure the critical path doesn't get a lot longer. Does that answer your question? Yeah. So in our textbook, they always forward to the to just before the pipeline registers, which is what I recommend. But certainly there are other designs which forward to just after the pipeline registers, which is also fine. You just need to make sure whatever you're doing, you aren't making the critical path a lot longer when you do forward. Does that answer question? Any other follow-ups? Okay, so looked at forwarding options. And we talked about our example here. I mentioned that, that in addition to having the value here, we could also have a case where we have an instruction in between, in which case we want to forward not from the just in the execute stage, but from the write back stage. This is another forwarding option here that would come up because we have an add separated by two instructions, but we still haven't written it back yet, and we still need to get that. So this is sort of what our fuller forwarding logic for the add pipeline processor would look like. We have this extra forwarding path, and we have to choose which one of those to use based on what makes sense in our pipeline. We'll talk a little more about that in a bit. Questions on this design? When we look at our five-stage, full processor, there's going to be a lot of forwarding. So, for example, here, I just look at my dependencies, so I say R9. Okay, we need to get the value of R9 from add to sub, and if we wait, if sub just reads, it's not going to read the most up-to-date value because it hasn't been written yet. So we're going to forward from the end of as execute to the end of the code's subs to code. We also need to get the value to rmoveq, because even though we're in writeback, it's not written until the end of the cycle. So again, we're going to forward from the end of writeback to the end of decode. We need to get in the second instruction, we have r11. We need to get the value from r11 from the subq to decode, so to decode of mrmoveq. Code of mrmoveq is happening during subq's execute, so it's going to grab it from execute. We also need to send the value of r11 to the rmoveq, so it's going to get that from subq's memory, just because that's where it is, right? We have to grab the values where they are in the pipeline. They're going through the pipeline on their way to write back. Grab them wherever they happen to end up. And also, we need to take the output of rmoveq's, the value we got from memory. We're going to send that directly to XOR, so we don't have to wait for it to be written back. And there's one piece of thing, one case here we had a dependency that didn't require forwarding. So in this case, the first add wrote R9. That was written in time for cycle 5 to read it, which is why there's no forwarding entry there. So you can see we have this small example, lots of forwarding going on. Sometimes multiple instances of forwarding in the same cycle. Sometimes all the values are forwarded. That's pretty common. It often ends up we aren't actually reading values directly from registers. Some questions? Now, sometimes we're going to have multiple candidates for forwarding. So one example of that is here. That I could forward the value of R8 from the first add to the last add. That is a forwarding path I'm going to implement. But I should not do that. Why shouldn't I do that? Well, because if we're figuring out what this instruction does by hand, the value of R8 I care about is the one from the most recently executed instruction, which is when I'm executing the last add. Is going to be the second one, not the first one. And when we're implementing forwarding, we need to take that into account. We don't want to do this forwarding when we have a better option. So how are we going to do that when we're writing our forwarding conditions? Is what we're going to look at next. Yes, question. Question is, couldn't we just do this by ordering our muxes? Yes, and that's exactly how we're going to do it. So if we make sure E becomes before M, that will solve this problem. And this is why our textbook designed muxes to work the way they do, where they look for the first thing which matches, because this makes it a lot easier. Otherwise, we have to like write some condition like, and it doesn't match a later case. We don't need to do that, we just need to order the cases carefully. But the order is really going to matter. Because if we don't get the order right, we're going to choose the wrong case, and we're going to give this last add instruction an old value for our needs. Some questions? So another case where we have multiple forwarding is that it's going to be not uncommon for one instruction to have two values forwarded to it. So in this case, we get R12 and R8, both forwarded. This is gonna happen kind of free. We're gonna have a mux for both RA and RB, most likely, values. So we're gonna just make sure that there's two different cases that can be selected at once. That's something that's gonna happen a bunch on some instructions. Some questions? Okay, so let's do a little exercise. Okay, who'd like some more time? Okay, let's start with the first one. In sub-Q or 8 is, let's start with A, who thinks not forwarded from, B, C, D, no clue. Okay, so the no clue is mostly A, and A is what I get. So R8, so our question is, when was R8, the value of R8 we're supposed to be using computed? And the answer is not in add Q, because add Q doesn't change R8. Yes, it has R8, but it doesn't compute it. So if the value of R8 is forwarded from anywhere, it must be an earlier instruction. And if it's not forwarded, well, we're reading it anyways from the register file, and that value we read would be correct. We might as well just use it rather than doing some extra work to get a different copy of the value. Questions how I came up with that answer. Okay, so let's do in XOR. The value of R9 is blank at Q. Who thinks A, not forwarded from Q, B, forwarded from decode from execute of at Q, C, forwarded from memory, okay, D, from write back. And okay, no clue. Okay, so most people agree on C. This is from memory. So first of all, why it's forwarded from add Q? Why is it forwarded from add Q? Well, the value of R9 we want, it was last set in add Q. That's where it has to come from. And we have to forward it because add Q is not going to be done writing this value by the time we want to read it. We want to read it in cycle 3. It's not going to be written until the end of cycle 4. So we need to use forwarding to get it, or do something like stalling, which we aren't doing based on this diagram here. So why does it come from memory? Well, because if we're forwarding to decode from memory, this is our forwarding line, you know, looks like this in sort of our timeline. And we can't, like, do time travel when we're doing forwarding. So the value has to stay at the same time. We can't, like, send the value from one cycle to a future cycle. You know, when we do the forwarding itself, that's within a cycle. Yes, it's going to go through a pipeline register at some point, but the forwarding happens within a cycle. So it goes from one stage to another in that cycle. And also, like, we can't do something like send the value back in time, so we can't send it from write back to decode because that's time travel. So questions how I figured that out? Okay, so let's do our next one. And NQ R9 is blank add Q. Thinks A, not forwarded from. Okay. B, C, D. Clue, okay, so most people figured out correctly. It's not forwarded from because the version of R9 we want was set in XOR. We don't want the old version from add. Yes, we need to forward it from write back if the add version was correct, but it's not. So how about from R9 is blank from XOR queue? Thanks. A, The okay. So we have anything else? No clue. Okay, so most people got B. And again, the way I figured out is from Xcode is I went to forward to decode. That's what the question says. Can't do time travel, so it has to be from the stage XOR is in at that time. So questions on this exercise overall? Yes?
So is the third one A because it's already been
forwarded? Third one A because it's already been forwarded? The third one is A because when we're forwarding the value, we only select one value. We can't like forward two copies of the same for the same register. There's only one value for that register. The one we selected is from XOR, so we're ignoring the one from add. Does that answer your question? Yeah.
So when it says forward to decode from like in the various stages, so does it only forward to decode? Or would it be like, would be a question where it's like, is it forward to
dash? The question is, could we forward to a different stage than the code? And the answer is that that is a possible processor design, and we will see in a few slides a reason why you'd want to do that. In our textbooks design, they only forward to the end of the code. But absolutely, we could forward to other places. It probably wouldn't make much sense to forward to an earlier stage because that's just making it less forwarding possible. But certainly, there are cases where we might want to do that. Okay. So, then forwarding, and based on this example, for our opcue instructions, forwarding solves our hazard problem. This is going to solve some other hazard problems. Let's look at one particularly annoying hazard problem. And here I have MR move key. So this is memory to register read. So I read into RBX, and then I try to use it in subtract. And if we think of doing forwarding, well, the value of MRMoveQ is available in cycle 3. We can't get it earlier because it comes from memory. We can't get it in the execute stage. We haven't read memory yet. But this means if I want to forward it, it seems like the earliest I can forward it is to the end of the execute stage, which is too late. So it doesn't seem like forwarding is possible. Now, this doesn't mean we have to say, now I need to stall. So I don't need to do, like say, oh, I can't get the value yet, so I'm just gonna keep waiting until the value is written and then get it. I'm not gonna do that. Because, you know, I don't need to wait until the value is written. I can still use forwarding here. I just can't use it right away. So what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna stall until I can do forwarding. And when can I do forwarding? Once the value has actually been read. Like I can't forward the value before it exists, but after the value exists, I can. And in this example, what I've got, how I've implemented this is I've said, I'm gonna get subtract to the execute stage and I'm gonna have some logic to detect, oh, I'd really love to forward the value from MRMoveQ, but it's not available yet. So we're going to stall. We're going to not fetch a new instruction to wait for the value to be available. And then I'm going to forward it once it is available. Some questions sort of about this scenario. So a related issue is if we have an MRMove queue where rather than using the value for a computation, we're using it to store another value in memory. And what we could do forwarding wise is that you ask the question of, you know, is there a reason to forward, could we forward to a stage other than decode? This would be a case where we'd really like to forward to a stage other than decode, because if we can forward the value of RBX to the end of the execute stage, well, that's fine because the RMoveQ instruction doesn't need it till the memory stage. And there are real processors that do this forward, that will forward the value from memory to execute to handle the case where you load something and then store it right away. Our textbook's design doesn't handle this case. Our textbook says we're going to stall in this case because we only forward to the end of the code. But real processors do actually do this forwarding to the end of the code, to the end of execute, which note that it only works because we don't actually use RBX in execute, right? We don't need it until after execute. If we needed it during execute, this wouldn't work very well because it's two links. But our textbook keeps things simple and only does this with, you know, forwarding the code, so they'll do the same stalling we saw here on that, even though it's not really needed. So questions about this sort of other option for forward? Okay, so let's do just a brief exercise. Here are some instructions. Assume that this is a little assembly snippet. Where do we have dependencies, which are hazards in our five-stage pipeline, which are resolved with forwarding, and what type of forwarding? Start with, where are the dependencies? This which instructions need the result of other instructions? Okay, start out. Can someone tell me about some dependencies? Tell me a dependency. Let's just. Any dependency, yes.
IRMoveQ and AddQ, RCX.
Okay, so the value of RCX from IRMoveQ to the following AddQ, I assume you mean? Okay. Yeah. Between the, okay, these two, and up there. So I, yeah.
First IQ for RBX
and the last one. Okay, so we have, should probably do to the end. Okay. Any other dependencies? Anyone, please? Okay. So a common point of confusion, which I think we somehow avoided, is that a lot of people really want there to be dependency between subtract and IRemoveQ, but IRemoveQ doesn't actually care what RCX was before. If it did, yes, we have a dependency, but it doesn't. Okay, so the next question is, which are hazards in our pipeline? So let's take our first dependency of RBX between the first and last add. Does someone who thinks that is a hazard, thinks that is not a hazard? Who can tell me, so people who think it's not a hazard, anyone want to volunteer to tell me, how did you determine it's not a hazard? Yeah. You're saying, oh, well, it's going to go through all, the first add is going to go through all the stages before the other one needs the value. And that's how I would figure it out. So if we make our pipeline diagram, just figure out relative timing, we see that when it's finished right back here, it finishes right back, the first add finishes right back before the second add reads. So yes, there's a dependency, but it's going to be satisfied by reading from the register file normally. There's no problem there. And this logic will show us that all the others are going to require forwarding. So the IRemoveQ, we're going to have to get the value forwarded. For the between the two adds, we're going to have to get the value forwarded. Questions? This example. Okay, so we've looked at our five-stage pipeline, and what pipeline we have will change what the hazards are. So we saw that, like, the determining that we didn't have a hazard from that first and last add, we needed to look at sort of how far things went through the pipeline. And if we say made our pipeline shorter, well, that's going to make some things, which were previously hazards, not hazards. Just because instructions will get through the pipeline faster, therefore, you know, it will be possible for an instruction to be through the pipeline when it wouldn't before, and therefore not be a hazard contender. So let's do exercise here. So let's say instead of making the pipeline shorter, I make the pipeline longer. So let's say I split execute into two substages, execute one and execute two. And let's assume I can't get the result of this split execute stage until the second execute, maybe the numbers before, because otherwise, like, why would we split it, right? If we could actually do the add in one cycle, why would I split it into two? And this is going to mean we're going to have more hazards. And some of the hazards, we're probably going to need more than just forwarding to solve. We're probably going to need some stalling. So my question is, you know, with that in mind, here's some instructions. Where are we going to do forwarding? Where are we going to do stalling when we execute them? who likes some more time to figure out what happens with the second instruction? Okay, so can someone tell me, so for the second instruction, we have R9, which has to get there. So can someone tell me, so presumably that's going to be forwarded. So can someone tell me when is that forwarding going to happen? From E to E, which E?
From E2 to D.
From E2 to D, okay. So we're gonna have it forwarded from E2 to D, which means D is gonna be here. So how does that happen? So we have fetch here. And so we have some sort of stalling happening. So we have a stall. I'm gonna say the stall happens. We try to decode and we say it, realize we can't, we do it right now. And the way we figure this out is that, well, you know, we have to forward the value. We can't forward the value until after E2. It's not available yet. So I look, where is the first time I can forward it? And that's, I have to delay the instruction until then with some sort of stalling. Some questions? Figuring that out? Okay, so let's just go through sort of how I did this example. So that's how I said, okay, we want, you know, a way I could figure it out is I sort of wrote out the natural timeline. I said, oh, I want R9 here, but if I got it, it would come from E1. It's not available yet. So I need to delay everything over, shift everything down. Now I can forward. And then I say, okay, now I need R9 for the next instruction. Can I get it? Well, I want it at the end of decode. I'm gonna get it from memory, because that's where it is, just because it's in the first add instruction. I'm gonna get it there, and that's all set. Then I look at my next dependency, which is R9 going into R move Q here, and I said, okay, so for this R move Q, I need it in time for memory. And can I get it? Yes. I can't get it in time for decode, but I can get it in time for memory. So that's the shortening path I chose to write. Now, there's a question here of, you know, what forwarding, how fast does this processor implement? I'm assuming that we implement this one. This is sort of not implemented in textbook design. So this idea of forwarding to the memory stage, not implemented in the textbook design, but it would be a good idea, right, to have that sort of support if we had a long pipeline like this, because the alternative seems like a lot of stalling. Yes?
So in a quiz, should we assume that it's using the textbook?
Question in a quiz, what do we do about these other forwarding paths? We will tell you what forwarding is possible. We might say all the possible forwarding is possible, in which case we mean all forwarding that doesn't like have bad critical paths. But we'll be explicit about it because, yes, it's a choice you have to make in your processor design, and if you implement all these extra forwarding paths, well, that's going to help you decrease cycle count. It's also going to make a bunch of things more complicated. Often in questions, we might say all the forwarding paths are possible, in which case we would mean ones like this where, you know, any forwarding path that doesn't increase the critical path a lot, which this would not. Does that answer your question? Okay. Other questions? And then we have our final instruction, which doesn't have any dependencies whatsoever. Okay. So questions? That's all about forwarding. So then we have another type of hazard we want to talk about, which is going to be our next big topic. Let's talk about dealing with data hazards. We had our forwarding solution with stalling, which does a pretty good job. We have a different type of hazard, which is control hazard. So here I do a subtract that's going to set the condition codes. And then I do a jump of equal. And there's a problem that I have this add Q instruction I went to, that's after this jump of equal. And if R8 and R9 were equal, I should run that instruction. If they weren't equal, I shouldn't. And that means I don't know what instruction I'm supposed to fetch. So this is a hazard. My pipeline, I can't make the circuitry to fetch the right thing because I haven't even done the subtraction yet by the time I want to fetch that value. Like, I don't know whether the values are equal because I haven't checked. So there's no way I can figure out what to do. That. So what do we do about this? This is a hazard. Well, I mentioned when we talked about hazards the first time that we have this generic solution for hazards, which is to stall. So one solution is to stall, that we wait, you know, to complete the jump until after we've done the actual subtraction. And then we figure out, okay, we're not actually done. So this is an option. This is something we can implement. And it's not actually what we're going to do. It's kind of dissatisfying that every single jump instruction, conditional jump instruction, is going to take two extra cycles. We want to avoid that. And we're going to have a way of avoiding that, which we're going to talk a lot more about later. And the key insight we're going to have is that right now, basically what we're doing, if we look at sort of a timeline, is we're spending two cycles waiting to figure out what to do. And what we'd like to do instead, is we'd like to say, well, if I look at this, the jump instruction, there are just two options. There's the option that I go to here, or that I go to here. And wouldn't it be better to start on one of those options just in case it's right, rather than wasting two cycles doing nothing? And that's what we're going to do. That's going to be called branch prediction. So we're going to choose one of those two options because we know what the possibilities are, rather than doing nothing. And the complicated part, of course, is going to be, well, what if we choose wrong? We're going to have to fix that. And we're going to talk a bunch about how we're going to fix that. Why is that not going to be crazy complicated? And it turns out it's not. So that's what we're going to do next time. We've finished up for today.